Silence.
Oppenheimer.
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Play Radio.
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 165 of Nerd Pride Radio. 165. Hey, thank you to Ronster for saving me all of this grueling research. He gave me not one, but two nerd facts for 165. 165 Cortland Street Northeast is the street address for the Atlanta Sheraton Downtown, one of five hotels that hosts Dragon Con every year. But also, June 14th is the 165th day of the year, and on June 14th, 1965, a rhesus monkey named Albert II became the first primate in space. How's that for nerd facts? So, ask me how I'm doing today. I am awesome. My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D slash Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd. Plus, there's like seven other kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore. Oh, my co-host this week, we're going to be Jacob Marley and the Ghost of Christmas Future, but they had to cancel because apparently this is their busy season. And I guess it's probably for the best because, I mean, they got a good act, really, but they're basically a ripoff of Penn & Teller, you know, whole silent partner thing. So anyway, it's just me tonight. Well, and my wife, but she's really busy. So we'll see how that plays out. Before I start anything, though, let's get into a little meta talk. Yeah, Meta Talk is just where I pull back the curtain a little bit, open the kimono, as it were, talk about the podcast, the website, behind the scenes kind of stuff. I actually was just going to let you know I had a surprise listener this week, and it was really kind of cool. All right, let me back up. I'll start the story at the beginning. My son Aiden, who you all know, has a good friend of his, Emily. Now, Emily is awesome, smart, industrious, funny, fun to be around. She's very cool. They've been friends a long time. And in fact, they even went on one unofficial date back when they were in like eighth or ninth grade, something like that. They went to a school dance together and they weren't old enough to drive. So I got to chauffeur them for this event. And, you know, they're all dressed up nice for the dance, the whole business. And so they get in the back of the vehicle. I'm driving. And as they're getting in, I'm cringing inside because Aiden was just being so typically Aiden, or at least typical for him at age 14. Not that he's that much different now, actually, now that I think about it. But he's back there having this conversation with her where he is just quoting random internet memes, because when you're 14, random equals funny. He's making Pokemon references. He's just generally nerding it up back there. And I'm just inside, I'm like cringing. I'm like, dude, you've got, you know, a date in the car and maybe, you know, maybe some level of decorum. I don't know. And then I turn around to look because they're giggling and like she's back there matching him quote for quote. I mean, they're just giggling like nerdy idiots. They had the exact same frame of reference. It was just really cool to watch them. And I'm like, oh, all right. Well, I guess I judged too quick. I'm glad I didn't say anything because, they just had a good time. They were built to be best friends. So, sorry about that. Bumped the microphone. And so they never did really date or anything, but they have stayed friends all this time. So now I come home the other day and Aiden is on the couch and he is Skyping with Emily because she goes to school out of state now. And they're talking in the same conversations. It's just like old times. It was just nice to hear. Very refreshing. And I didn't hear what the conversation was to start this, but Emily pipes up over Skype because she knows I'm in the room, and she says, Mike, did your cat really eat its last owner's face? And so I'm like, okay, yes, sorta. I mean, okay, when we got the cat, you know, all we get is a little blurb from the shelter that says that, you know, the previous owner had died, and so the cat was brought to the shelter. And we had had a discussion with the kids about how, you know, if you die in your home and no one finds you for a while, a dog is loyal enough and social enough that it'll sit by your side and wait. And quite often, dogs will starve to death right next to their dead master's body. Whereas a cat will give you a day or two, but then eventually a cat gets hungry and it'll just start eating you. I mean, once you're tender enough, cat doesn't mind eating you. And so we had told them that, and they're like, do you think Bear ate his last owner? And so we made up this big story that clearly that's what happened. And he's this big vicious animal. And so we made this huge story about it. We decided we were going to tell everybody that, but I can't actually tell everybody that because once I tell them that story, I then have to go, no, that's not really true. I can't maintain it, but Aiden apparently can. And so he had told Emily the story, and I'm like, so I explained to her what I just explained to you guys, that yes, that's the story we're telling, but it's not necessarily true. But, you know, we can believe it's true if we want to. And so she says, well, you didn't mention any of that on the podcast. And I'm like, what? You actually listen to my podcast? And she's like, well, you gave me an official business card. How could I not listen? I'm like, oh, how cool. Which, by the way, thank you to Sarah Beth for the business cards, because otherwise Emily wouldn't have been listening, right? And so the upshot of all of this is I'm just always so tickled to find out that someone listens to the podcast that I didn't know was a listener. It is really heartwarming, and is really cool. Heartwarming, not heartwarming. That's different. It's just really cool. So seriously, I know at the end of the podcast, I always say, if you want to do something nice for this podcast, you know, tell a friend, let somebody know, share it. Okay. But also, you know what? If you really want to do something nice for this podcast, especially if you've never introduced yourself to me, just drop me a line and say hi. Tell me you listen. I honestly can't express how much of a morale boost that is. Just knowing that you guys are out there, that you're listening, you're participating, that this is valuable to you. It's very, very cool. So anyway, hi Emily, and thank you for letting me tell this story. And we can't do meticulously plotted portion of the podcast yet, because it's time for yet another segment in our yet another installment. There we go. I don't have the script here. Yet another installment in our all too frequent segment. Mike was wrong. All right. Not terribly wrong, but wrong. I talked a little bit about Archer, the TV show last week. And I had mentioned that in a lot of ways, Archer was very much a workplace style sitcom with your quirky characters and the typical reactions. And here's the thing is that season one of Archer really is like that. But season two, I've just finished watching season two of Archer, and it's like the show found its stride. And all of a sudden in season two, it's not just a cute, fun show. I'm genuinely into it and genuinely enjoying it and looking forward to new episodes, because in the new season, well, new to me, I get it. It's several years old. But in season two, at least, suddenly there's real plot lines going on. And I mean, it's still goofy, silly, stupid fun, but my favorite change is that season one, Archer was just this bumbling, incompetent jackass. And now in season two, oh yeah, he's still a bumbling, incompetent jackass about everything except being a secret agent. He's literally the world's greatest secret agent. You just have to put up with all of his other crap that goes with it. I am so loving this show. So I take back what I said last week. That was just based on season one. I'm telling you, once you get into season two, wow, which again, I don't even know. I'm recommending this like I'm going to turn any of you guys onto it. Now, look, any of you who are going to try Archer, you're way ahead of me. You've already done this. So anyway, just had to point that out that, yeah, man, I misjudged that completely. I really should have watched a little further. So let's see. That's it. All right, now it's time for the meticulously plotted portion of the podcast. This is the time for me when I talk about whatever has been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week. It's been so busy. I add it to my master list in my handy dandy pocket mod, and the very best stuff off that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. So, first up on the master list, my science corner.
Ooh, she blinded me with science.
She blinded me with science.
Blinded me with science.
And that music means if you don't walk away now, you might be in danger of learning something. Okay, this week, it was Weebelow's science. It was awesome. So I'm the den master for the Weebelow's group of our Cub Scouts, and that's Noah's group. And this week, I decided that we were going to work on our science activity badge, which Noah already has the science badge, and I mean, science is his thing. But the other two guys don't, and we're just in a situation where the other two guys have to play a lot of catch up here, and Noah loves it so much that he was more than happy to go through this stuff again. We put some variations on it, and it was very cool. And so, in the Weebelow science, among many required things that they had us do, you know, we had to explore the scientific method, and they had to diagram how they would run an experiment in order to test whatever hypothesis. And so they got to play with crayons and they got to draw plants and fertilizers, and it was actually really cool. Anyway, that's a whole nother story. We did some electricity because Noah has a set of they're called snap circuits, and it's a toy at home that this big kit where you snap the pieces together, and everywhere you snap pieces together, they form an electrical circuit. So you connect one end of these plastic pieces to the battery, and then the other ends to whatever devices you've got in there. And you can put together circuits in all sorts of ways, and you can make a radio out of it. You can light up the light bulbs. You can make various sounds and alarms. There's a fan and lots of stuff that gets involved with this. He's got a couple of sets of them, and they're super cool. Everybody loved the snap circuits. So we did electricity for a while. We did some playground physics. We went outside and dropped stuff of different weights off of tall towers. Which, by the way, when I walked up there with – I've got a little tiny ball and a big old heavy ball, and I walk up to the top of the tower on the playground equipment, and I'm going to drop the two off, and I asked everybody. I said, okay, I'm going to let these suckers go. Which one's going to hit the ground first? Again, Noah's already been through this. He knew the answer. The other two, both of them answered right away, oh, the heavy one's going to hit the ground first. I'm like, oh, man, I forgot. I forgot you have to learn that. So sure enough, we drop them off. They hit the ground at the same time. We tested a couple times. They were amazed. So then we went over the swing sets, and we used them to talk about pendulums and periodicity, and it was really enjoyed doing that part. But the best part of doing Cub Scout science was we had to build a scale model of the solar system. Well, solar system. You guys know how much I love my solar system, how much I love planets. And so I knew how long the school was, because it was by the time we had our meeting, it's winter now, so way too dark to do this out on the playground. We could do some of the stuff outside, but we couldn't do the scale model solar system outside. So instead, I knew how long the school was. And if you start from the cafeteria and you walk all the way down the longest hall of the school, you can go 325 feet. So based on that, I measured out with the kids and said, okay, here's where all the planets would fall. I'm going to take this many steps before we put down Mercury, this many steps before we put down Venus, et cetera, et cetera. And then we could have the whole thing laid out. And just for fun, because I'm obsessive like this, when I've seen this one done before, it's always just, you know, you have a big picture or a big sign that represents the sun, and then equally big picture for each of the planets so that you can see the details of the planets. So the planets themselves are not to scale with everything else. But I thought to myself, well, you know, if I know ahead of time how much space I've got to walk out from the sun to Neptune, because they require that you end at Neptune because that's, you know, where the end of the planets are. And which, fortunately, did give me the opportunity to have them go, well, what about Pluto? And then, you know, we had to talk about dwarf planets, and I explained that, well, Pluto would be another, you know, 30-some steps out that way or whatever. So we did have the good conversation about it. But anyway, knowing how big my solar system was going to be, I went ahead and decided to print up the planets to scale for how big my solar system is, which boy, that made them tiny. It really put some stuff in perspective. Because my sun, I mean, when you got a 325-foot solar system to go from the sun out to Neptune, the sun is 1.2 inches across, 3 centimeters for my European friends. So, the sun is already tiny compared, I mean, it's golf ball sized compared to the size of the solar system. And so I laid the sun down where it goes, and then we put down Mercury, and Mercury was literally, if my solar system had been any smaller, you would not have been able to see the dot. As it was, you look at the paper and go, there's nothing. Oh, wait, no, hold on. Oh, there it is. Okay, now I see it. Mercury was so small you could barely see it. And then we laid out each of them. I mean, you know, Jupiter and Saturn were both, you know, BB size, P size. They were tiny. And so we paced them all out, and, you know, here's Mercury and Venus and Earth are all right up close to the sun. And then we start pacing out further and further and further. And it was, I don't know if the kids really got the same sense of it that I did. I mean, I actually learned a lot from doing this. I mean, I knew all these facts already. It's not like I haven't gone over the solar system a million times. But to walk the whole thing out and to stand out there, I got to point out to them that, hey, if the sun is in scale with the rest of it, what that means is, if you set the sun here, and then you stand over here where Earth ought to be, take a look at that sun. That's how big the sun should be in the sky. And, oh, yeah, you know what? That is about how big it is in the sky from Earth. You're absolutely right. Okay, good. Well, same thing. Let's walk all the way out to Neptune and see how big the sun looks from Neptune. And what we found out is, hey, you can't see the sun from Neptune. Well, because, you know, ours was just printed on a piece of paper. We knew where it was supposed to be. We could look in that direction, but we couldn't see it anymore. We're too far away. And so I said, see, that's because from Neptune, the sun doesn't look like the sun looks to us. To Neptune, it's just another star. I mean, a really bright one, but still just another star. And of course, Noah, being pedantic, has to go, well, that's because it is a star. Well, I understand that, but you get the point that, you know, we're used to the sun being this big bright yellow ball in the sky. And it turns out, you know, from further out from the rest of the solar system, not so much. So, but that wasn't the end of our solar system. The best part, and I don't know if anyone else finds this as entertaining as I do, best part is, you know, we're doing this in the school after hours. It's like 7 o'clock at night by the time we're laying out our solar system. And in the middle of it, the janitor comes by pushing her broom, and she's got her headphones on, and I can see the path she's taking. And I knew if I wanted to, I could have run down there and stopped her and said something to her, because she's very nice and she would have been perfectly happy to go around our stuff. But I saw where they were going, and the kids weren't paying attention to her at this point. And she was going to go right through the middle where we had Jupiter and Saturn. And sure enough, she goes through and she swept up Jupiter and Saturn. They were so small that she didn't even notice them there. And she just swept them up and moved them along her way. And so then I got to point out to the kids, and this tickled me to no end, but I got to point out to the kids, oh my God, she just swept up our planets. I loved that. So, and so sure enough, we went and we, told her about it later, and I had to reassure her that no, it's really fine. It could have stopped you if I wanted to, but just go ahead and take them. It's no big deal. So sure enough, the kids got to go track down where it was she had swept everything up to and found her dust pile in the corner and went, oh, there they are. There they are. All of our planets just got swept away. So, I really enjoyed that. We had so much fun with We Below Science. So now, speaking of planets, because I know how to do segues, first off, I was listening to the Astronomy Podcast, which is the Canadian astronomy podcast, just called the Astronomy Podcast. And the Astronomy Podcast is quickly becoming one of my favorites. I love listening to these two. They're very knowledgeable, and they're fun, and they talk about all sorts of things I'm interested in. And, particularly, they were talking about colonizing Mars because, you know, who isn't talking about colonizing Mars lately, right? So with all the talk we've got, and, you know, you can go out and look, and there's, you know, waiting lists of people who really would love to have their chance to take that one-way trip out to Mars and colonize the planet and all this. And as far as I'm concerned, I've always thought that, yeah, well, Mars is great, but, you know, shouldn't we work on colonizing, you know, space in general first? Shouldn't we learn to live in space before we, I don't know, take a 3-year trip out to a poisonous ball of rock, you know, a billion miles away? It seems to me that we have so many opportunities to build on our space station technology and create an actual, at least close to self-sustaining habitat in space before we go, you know, shooting off to other planets? Because we could do this. We could build these things, and yet we don't. We would rather go rocketing out to Mars, where we're going to wind up probably failing ultimately. I mean, we'll set something up out there and we'll have a base, but then that base will remain mostly empty for decades because it's way too expensive to resupply it. We're not going to come up with a self-sustaining habitat on Mars because we don't know how to create one yet. I mean, we think we do. We have some good ideas, but we've never tested any of these ideas out in actual space. Because, and this is where the astronomy podcast came in, because I've always thought that, you know, while Mars is cool and it would be awesome to say that we sent a person to Mars, when it comes to colonizing space, I mean, let's look at setting up a base on the moon first. Let's look at setting up something in space first to show that we can do it and make it survivable, and then move on to Mars. And they said almost the same thing. My favorite was because, you know, I didn't know what to expect from them. They open up with, well, I can't remember which one of them said it, but basically opened up with, yeah, Mars is just the worst. And then they went on to list all the horrible things about Mars that make it so tough to survive out there. The low gravity, no atmospheric pressure, freezing temperatures pretty much constantly. I mean, it ranges from, oh, maybe your ice starts to thaw out a little bit, all the way down to, oh, it's snowing carbon dioxide. That's how cold it gets. The soil is toxic. We can't grow anything there without purifying it and reconditioning it. And I mean, there's just so many things about Mars. And in fact, and I didn't even think about this. I know living out in space is tough on a human being. When you live out in space and you don't have gravity, your bones start to get brittle, and there's other health problems that can develop from being without gravity. And I just always assumed that, yeah, but if we went to Mars, you wouldn't have those problems. But they don't know that for sure. I mean, Mars is only about one-third of Earth. You know, the moon is one-sixth. And so all we know is that living for an extended period in space is a death sentence, whereas living on Earth is pretty much okay. They don't know where that dividing line is between Earth gravity and zero gravity. Where is the dividing line that is, okay, that's enough gravity that you can survive without any major health problems? We don't know where that is. We have no idea if Mars is actually sustainable as far as gravity. Also, I, in my list of stuff, I didn't even mention all the radiation that's out there. They have no protection from radiation, so their suggestion was, you know, if we're going to colonize Mars, we probably have to live underground. Probably the only way to survive it. So anyway. Oh, sorry about the long pause there. I thought I was going to sneeze, and then it didn't happen, and then I got distracted. So anyway, I'm back now. So the other thing that they talked about, since we're still in the science corner and all, is one of the options for colonizing space just right here around Earth before we look at moving on to somewhere else is to build what they called, well, it's, they called it, it, the name of it is an O'Neill cylinder. And did I mention O'Neill cylinders last time I talked about colonizing space? I can't remember if I did, but super cool. All right. It's actually a couple of big cylinders. And because you have two gigantic cylinders out in space because they have to be rotating in order for them to maintain some gravity inside, artificial gravity. And so when you've got the cylinder rotating in space, you then put another cylinder right next to it rotating in the opposite direction. That way they balance each other out and the things don't go, you don't have problems with the spinning. And, or at least not the same problems. And with the O'Neill cylinder, each one of these cylinders, 5 kilometers wide, 20 kilometers long. That's just impressive. And the amount of surface area on the inside for living, also equally impressive. It has enough air inside that, you know, with 5 kilometers worth of air, the light that's coming through, you are pretty well protected from the radiation by the atmosphere that's already inside of this thing. They would set it up with windows and rotating mirrors to give you a relatively solid day-night cycle. We can spin it up so it's as close to Earth gravity as we want it to be. Then the cylinders are wide enough that the rotation, you're gonna notice it's not real gravity. It feels a little bit weird. They say that if you drop something, you know, if you drop something from shoulder height, by the time it hits the ground, it's going to be off by a few centimeters from where you thought it was going to land because of the rotation. But it's just a cool concept. And the whole thing that's built, look up O'Neill Cylinder. It's just really fun. And it's one that I had not seen before. Or at least, see, that's the other thing is I remember talking about cylinders. I remember talking about bubbles and chains. And also, I know I had a whole space colonization episode a while back. But if I talked about O'Neill cylinders, I completely forgot that they existed. And then they were brand new to me again, so I got to be all excited about them. So I did a whole bunch of research on them. It was just really, really fun. So anyway, that's it for my science corner. Just me babbling on. But hey, Cub Scout science is pretty darn awesome. All right, next up, what do I got? Oh, it's a nerd culture report.
I thought this was bowling for weirdos.
No, Gonzo, but you are very, very close. All right, my nerd culture report, I have been listening to Doug Loves Movies a lot recently, and I had listened to Doug Loves Movies a few years ago. Yeah, I enjoyed it for a little bit, but then didn't quite get into it. Now this time, for some reason, it's just really striking a chord with me, and I'm really enjoying listening to it. And one of the things that gets me is Doug Benson really loves movies, thus the title of the podcast. But man, his knowledge of movies is encyclopedic. I mean, he doesn't know everything, but he knows more than anybody else that shows up on his show. I mean, he knows almost every movie and who starred in it, and he's a stickler about making sure people say the full titles of everything because he knows all of the subtitles. He knows all of the, and it got me thinking that, you know, there are people who have encyclopedic knowledge about certain topics, and it's something that I'm a little bit jealous of because I know a lot of stuff about a lot of things, but I'm not the most knowledgeable guy on any one topic. And so I know enough to get myself in trouble a lot of times. I know enough to pretend like I'm an authority and speak with confidence, especially, you know, to people who are unfamiliar with the topic. Like get me talking about planets and stars and stuff like this. And I can go on and on and on. And I can impress all the people who are around me. But I know absolutely nothing compared to a real astronomer. I'm barely, you know, an amateur at this stuff. Or even, people who know everything about Pokemon, for example, or people who know everything about Magic the Gathering, or who, you know, there are people who have their niches that they know everything. Maybe I've got mine. Maybe I've got something out there that I do know that well. I just don't recognize that I do. I mean, you know, I'm pretty good at Pathfinder, but you know, because I play a lot of Pathfinder. I really enjoy it. But you know, I'm not the smartest guy out there at it. So it's just I just got to thinking about it. Like I say, listening to Doug, I'm like, oh, man, is there anything that I'm that good at? Like I listen to Me Like Trivia, which, by the way, proud member of the Nerd Pride Network, podcasting network. Go listen to Me Like Trivia. These guys are awesome. In fact, they do every other Thursday. They do a live broadcast of the video of their podcast goes out over YouTube, and you can actually, I think, you can go back and catch the videos afterwards if you didn't get to participate, but you can watch them record live and participate in chat and that kind of stuff, and it's really, really cool. But, you know, listen to Me Like Trivia, and they start getting into topics that I have absolutely no idea how they know so much about this stuff. I'm just baffled. I'm in awe. I love listening to them talk. So, but I had a point to make. What was my point? I honestly don't know. I started this for a good reason. I really did. All my notes here say is, Doug loves movies, encyclopedic knowledge. And then there's a note that says something about comparing it to Star Talk, but I don't know why I'd compare it to Star Talk. Man, sometimes my master list and my handy dandy pocket mod is just not as clear as I'd like it to be. Because I just unsubscribed from Star Talk again. You know, I love Neil deGrasse Tyson. I really do. And I love watching him in interviews and stuff. But man, listening to his show, it's just not quite enough for me. You know what I mean? It is, I feel like, see, this is the problem. I have just enough knowledge about astronomy and physics that I'm not at the basic level, and his show is really, really geared towards a pop audience. It's the connection of pop culture and science. And I'm just not, I feel like every time I listen to Star Talk, as fascinating as some of these subjects are, and there's been a couple episodes where I've really gotten into it, but for most of them, I spend most of the episode going, well, yeah, but what goes after that? What's the next step? I want them to dig just a little bit deeper. And, oh, they just don't quite get to it. And so I find Star Talk a little bit frustrating for that it's just, man, I want just a little bit more out of it. And which is not, it's not what he's doing. That's not the audience he's trying to reach. I'm obviously not the audience he's trying to reach. And so that's too bad because I really like him and I really like pretty much all of the guests that he has on. I just, oh man, it's just not enough science for me. So is that a weird thing to say about Star Talk? Yeah, maybe. But that wasn't the point I don't remember what the point I was going to make is. So you know what? I'm going to leave this here in the pocket mod. And if it strikes me in the next week or so what it was I was going to talk about, and it will, I'll write it down. I'll come back to it. We'll revisit sometime. So that was my lame nerd culture report. And that is all I have for the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. You know what that means? That's right. It's time for the Pod-O-Matic. Hot dog! This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 in his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? You send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds, and I will add it to my Pod-O-Matic list, because Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. The first number is 42. Very auspicious. 42 is from Kyle. Hey, Kyle. Kyle asks, when and what was the last video game that you played for an hour straight or more? Mine was Until Dawn. Oof. Maybe Slither, although I don't know that I ever played Slither for an hour straight. That's a tough one. And I uninstalled Slither from my machine because I wasn't playing it anymore. Let's see. Before that, I can't, probably, and Slither would have been maybe about 4 or 5 months ago, 6 months ago. How long has it been since I played Slither? I don't even know. Before that, I would guess Portal. Portal's the last real video game, like an actual PC video game, console video game. Portal would be the last video game that I actually played, more than just a passing, you know, give it 5-10 minutes just to see how it goes, that kind of thing. And Portal was awesome. I mean, obviously everybody loves Portal, but when did I do that? That was, let's see, Jacob was still living at home, so 3 or 4 years ago, at least. I mean, it's been a long time. I don't devote much time to video games anymore. I wish I could. I wish I had the kind of time for it. Or maybe I do have the kind of time for it. I just choose to spend my time other ways. I don't know. But yeah, no, it's been a while. So yeah, I'm going to go with Portal. That's going to be my official answer. 78, which first I have to number 42. Hold on. There we go. And let's roll on down to 78. There it is. 78 is also from Kyle. Kyle put in a lot of them recently. Kyle says, what foods do you put salt on automatically, like without tasting it first? Not a one. In fact, very rarely do I add salt to anything. I'll add salt while I'm cooking, if I'm cooking. And I have no problem with that. A pinch of salt here, or, you know, whatever the recipe calls for. I understand the value of salt in cooking as flavoring. But in general, I don't ever add salt after. I don't even have a salt shaker to put out on my table because we just don't do that. I mean, the food is spiced before we cook it, and then you take it. Well, I mean, maybe we'll break out the pepper if we've got eggs. But other than that, yeah, I don't add salt to anything. 55. 55 is also from Kyle. All right, we're going to make this the all Kyle Podomatic episode. And Kyle says, you only get one album to listen to for the rest of your life. You'll be unable to hear any other music. What do you choose? Pat and I decided that we should pick a double album or a greatest hits album, more music with that. And I went with The Police greatest hits. Ooh. I might, yeah, you know what? I wouldn't have thought of a double album. That's a really good idea. Because my first instinct is to say, Beck's Mellow Gold. But yeah, I don't listen to Mellow Gold as much as I used to. I mean, that was one that 20 years ago, I could listen to that album nonstop all the time, anytime, because I loved every song on it. And I still do, but it's just not as exciting. But, you know, since then, obviously, listening patterns have changed and the way we buy music has changed. And so it's rare that you actually buy whole albums of music anymore. So if I'm going to pick a whole album, it has to be something older because I'm not familiar enough with modern albums. I might actually go with the Beatles' White Album, which, I mean, I love the White Album. I love just about everything on the White, except for number 9. Oh, God. You know, if number 9 wasn't on there, I wouldn't even blink because that's a good one. But yeah, you know what? I'm just going to go with the White Album. I'm just going to stick with that. Let's not question it. 93. And 93 says, let's see. Oh, there it is. It's from Stan. All right. I guess it's not an all Kyle episode. Sorry, Kyle. Stan says, if you had superpowers, this is not going where I thought it was. What sort of costume would you have? If I had superpowers, I would be one of those guys who doesn't wear an official costume. Yeah. Look, because you're asking if I had superpowers, what kind of costume would I wear? Well, I'd just wear what I always wear, except I'd have superpowers. Now, if I was living in the Marvel or DC universe and I had superpowers and I wanted to choose to be a superhero, what kind of costume would I wear? Boy, you know, I'm a big fat guy. I don't know what's going to look good as far as superheroing goes. I mean, yeah, and it depends on what my superpowers are. I really don't know. I'm probably going to go with knee-high boots and a short skirt, but I can't say for sure. I mean, again, it depends on what powers I have. 58 comes from, oh, it's Kyle. All right, we're back to form. Kyle says, you have a 45-minute commute to work each day. I don't. That's the answer you're thinking of, but I get this is hypothetical. All right. You carpool with 4 other people and rotate drivers every day of the work week. If you could have anyone in history in your carpool, who would it be? Remember, your life depends on their driving skills. That is a great question, and I have no idea. Who would I want in my carpool for a 45-minute drive every day? All right, see, now you've thrown in the, hey, remember this, that your life depends on their driving skills. That means I have to take someone who knows how to drive, right? Or you know, do I pick someone from further back in history and just trust that they'll, you know, we can coach them through the first few times. They'll learn to drive, right? Right? No, you've already given me the warning. Boy, you know what? Knowing that this is going to be ongoing, there's lots of really interesting historical answers I could give, but I don't know how interesting those people would be, over the long haul. So, there's going to be 4 of us, you said? Yeah, 4 of us. All right. Then in that case, it is 4 other people. Ooh, then I have an extra slot left over because I'm going to do, it's me, Chris Hardwick and Will Wheaton and Felicia Day because I would have lots to talk about with them, and we would have an awesome time. And then I've got a fifth slot left over. You want in on this, buddy? Seriously? I mean, honestly, I think you would enjoy this. But then if I share it, then it's not, then I don't get to brag about it as just, you know what? I'm not going to be selfish. Kyle, you can join us. I think this would be a good ride. 06. 06 is, all right now. Oh, there we go. I had locked up. I'm all right now. And now I roll all the way to the top of the page, and it's from Daz. Daz says, "So where is this Omaha place anyhow?" he says with his tongue firmly planted in his cheek. Omaha, it's on the eastern edge of Nebraska. Nebraska being that state with the weird panhandle on it that's, you know, that would be Oklahoma with the weird panhandle. That one's really weird. Nebraska, we're right in the middle of the country. We're right below the Dakotas, right above Kansas. Yeah, seriously, out further west even than Iowa, but not quite as far as Colorado and Wyoming. You know us, Nebraska, right in the middle of the country. All right. And then Omaha is just on the eastern edge of that, on the Missouri River. So, do you know where Council Bluffs is? If you've been to Council Bluffs, it's honestly just the other side of the river from that, dude. It's not that tough. All right. 06 again. I think R2's high. 06 again. What is locked up here? There we go. 51. And 51 goes, I shook him up and everything, and he still gave me an 06. I think he's pissed. And he's trying to tell me something. This one's from Kyle again. Surprise. Kyle says, guinea pigs suck. Am I right? Oh, God, yes. Guinea pigs suck. I'm with you. But what small animals do you recommend as pets? No dogs, cats, or birds, please. Oh, jeez. How are you going to do that? Yeah, my wife has a suggestion.
It takes a lot of work, but Jacob's hedgehog is
yes.
Adorable.
Yes, absolutely correct. You guys, if you couldn't hear her, my son Jacob has a hedgehog, and if you are willing to do your research, and if you're willing to do the work it takes, a hedgehog is an awesome pet. It just really... He puts in a lot of time. I mean, he socializes with it. He spends time with his hedgehog every night. When he's watching TV or doing homework, he's got the hedgehog out. It's on his lap. It's crawling up onto his shoulder. It's his hedgehog, by the way, is Miles Hedgeworth. And Miles is just really cool. And with all this socialization that Jacob does, and he did the research to understand what, you know, when he starts doing this thing, or when he starts foaming at the mouth, or when he's, you know, whatever, Jacob can tell you that, oh, this is what he's doing. This is why he's doing that. Here's what it means and how we probably ought to react to that. Either he's, you know, sometimes he's just being a spoiled baby. Sometimes, it looks like he's being weird, but he's actually marking himself with your scent because he really likes you that much. That kind of thing. And Miles is just really cool. We just saw him yesterday, in fact. We happened to be passing through town, so we stopped just to say hi. We were only there for 5 minutes, but Jacob had Miles out with him, and so we got to hold him and pet him and talk to him a little bit, and it's a really cool pet. Really cool. But again, it really takes a lot of work. And if I understand correctly, they bond with just one person or just one or two people, and it takes a little while. Now that Jacob's put in the effort and he's built that bond with him, now he can sort of, you know, introduce him and share him with other people, and Miles starts to take to other people faster and this kind of thing. But man, if you're willing to put in the effort, a lot of effort, totally worth your time. If you don't want to put in the effort, get a tank full of fish. They're pretty to look at. They don't require anything from you, and you can just enjoy them for what they are. Just a pretty little visual to follow around. All right. But if you want to put some work in, I know you said no birds, but there are plenty of smart birds out there that aren't even that expensive, and you can get a decent smart fun bird that, as long as you're willing to do the socialization, as long as you're willing to spend the time with it, like the hedgehog. Worth your time, but man, you got to put some work in. But man, Miles is so cool. He's really awesome. 12. Not fast enough for what, baby? Do you have one more to add? She was looking around for her pet rock that she keeps in her classrooms. Yeah, that's a moi. If you want a low maintenance pet, rock. All right. Number 12 is from, it's from Master. Hey, Master. Master says, what number is this? It was number 12. Okay. That's what I thought you said. Carry on. 42. We did that one. We opened on that one. 02. 02 is from Billy Bob. Billy's Bob says, what's your preferred method of apocalypse? Oh, that's actually a great question. I know zombie apocalypse is really, really popular. But if I'm going to destroy the world, flux. That's my choice. And when I say flux, I'm talking about we had to destroy a world for the superhero world Legacy of Justice. We needed an apocalypse to make that setting work. And so what I decided was that some mystical energy substance called flux leaks in from limbo or we don't know where. But basically, you know, some mad scientist, evil genius, supervillain set off his doomsday device, and his doomsday device shatters the barrier between worlds. And now we have this flux energy that leaks into our world. And in some places, it's very intense and it kills people. In other places, it results in random mutations and new superpowers. And so, that was the choice of apocalypse for us. And it killed off, you know, 90% of the planet and left the rest, you know, again, riddled with mutants and superpowers and other things. And, I suppose it could have been a very Gamma World type of setting for all that, because Gamma World does, a lot of the same with the radiation and mutations. But, you know, radiation now, we kind of understand that radiation is a lot more deadly than it is, you know, full of fun, fantastical mutations. So I went with Flux, which is the version of that doesn't just, you know, poison the whole planet and kill everybody eventually very slowly, and instead really does give a bunch of people superpowers. So that was my preferred method of apocalypse. But, you know, maybe that's just me. 84 is, there it is. It's from Kyle. All right. Is this going to be where we end this one? Yeah, let's stop on Kyle. Kyle says, I took trig. I got an A in trig when I was a sophomore. I can't remember what trig is. What's trig? Is it important? Okay, trigonometry is also basically just advanced algebra. When I took trig, and Jacob and Aiden have both taken trigonometry recently. Yes, it's an advanced algebra class, but it also deals a lot with, oh man, for some reason, I always associate trig with doing your sines, cosines, tangents, and then, you know, beyond, oh man, there's so many different functions that go with it. But more than anything, as my friend Google here is telling me now, trigonometry is the study in mathematics of relationships between lengths and angles of triangles. So thus the sine, cosine, tangent, etc. And the secant and the cosecant and the, oh man, there's just so many. And it is a, I kind of view it as combining raw geometry with real numbers, but that's probably just my simplistic mind putting it all together. Let's just call it the study of triangles. How's that? Trigonometry, study of triangles. It's a lot more complex than that. You build a lot out of it, but that's the basics of it. What was the actual question? And is it important? Oh God, yeah, it's vitally important, I would assume, to engineering and physics and all sorts of important mathy science stuff that maybe you and I aren't involved with. But I'm sure if you were to ask, you know, none of the technology that you feel is important to you today, all the technology that makes your life actually function the way it's supposed to, none of it, not a single bit of it would exist if it weren't for trigonometry. I'm sure that would be the truth if we could get someone to explain why that is. So there you go. All right. Do we end on trigonometry? Yeah, I think we do. All right. Now it's time for GLaDOS to come out, and she will give us a recap of this week's episode.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2016 by Nerd Pride Radio. That's me. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week was Weezer's In the Garage. And no, I didn't do Weezer's In the Garage. I didn't have a gaming table. I had She Blinded Me with Science as performed by William Shatner. That's what I did. But all the songs I use here are available on iTunes. Check them out, buy them, enjoy them. I wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't love them. You want instructions on how to make your very own Pocket Mod? Head on over to PocketMod.com. Don't forget, this podcast is a proud member of the Nerd Pride Network. Angry Geeks Versus, Casting the Curious, Me Like Trivia, quality nerd podcasting from quality nerd people. If you want to do something nice for this podcast, recommend it to a friend or, as I mentioned earlier, seriously, drop me a line. Just let me know you're listening. Make my day, honestly. Remember, I am always looking for you people to do my work for me, just as Ronster did at the beginning of this cast. Don't forget to send me questions and topics for the Podomatic. Watch out every week on the forums and on Facebook for listener betrayal. And if you have a really interesting nerd fact about an upcoming episode number, send it to me. Save me all of that grueling research. I'm sure you guys noticed the uptick in quality of this episode because I didn't have to waste so much time doing all that grueling research, right? All right, my contact information, mike@nerdprideradio.com, @nerdprideradio on Twitter, facebook.com/nerdprideradio. But to be completely honest, you guys know it. The very best way to talk to me is come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. You sign up there, you send me a message, we will hang out together and become best friends in the world. We'll have fun. Now it's time for listener betrayal. Before I start every cast, I go out to Facebook and I go out to my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds and I post up, hey, I'm recording. Anyone who wants to join me can. Anything you guys post there, I will read off right at the end of the podcast, which is what I'm doing now. And I'm going to start off going out to Facebook. And I should probably tell them I'm done just in case. Done. All right. There we go. And posting. All right, it went through. All right, first off, it's from Sarah Beth. And Sarah Beth says, this is from DM Darks. Have you ever eaten turkey joints, the candy? No, but I will go to Google and I'll find out what that is. Turkey joints candy. Turkey joints candy recipe. How about that? Let's see. Turkey joints says, original turkey joints, silvery sugar coating with a center filled with rich chocolate and Brazil nuts. I knew. I've never had that in my life. Let's get an image of that. I want to see what a turkey joint candy looks like. Weird. I have never seen that. Huh. That looks really, really creepy. Wow. It's like you'd be breaking off and sucking on bone. Wow. No, I've never done it, but, it sounds fascinating. I'd be willing to try any candy once. So, I don't know. next up, Sarah Beth says, this is from her, sort of. She says, I was listening to the podcast Crime Writers On, and they were doing a live recording. Somehow Nebraska and whether or not they would ever visit there came up. I don't exactly remember how, but Laura Bricker said she couldn't think of anything in Nebraska worth visiting. Prove her wrong and tell us what is awesome about Nebraska. All right, first off, I'm here. So if you visited Nebraska, me, hello. But more than that, look, we just took this last summer, you know, because we try and take a family vacation every summer. And this summer we decided we were going to take a vacation around western Nebraska because there are parts of this state that we haven't ever visited. And we had an absolute blast. We really enjoyed ourselves. We went to out to Scott's Bluff and actually stood. Scott's Bluff is the name of the largest town out in way western Nebraska. And but is named for the actual Scott's Bluff. And Scott's Bluff was interesting, fascinating. We had fun. We hiked up. We got to see the sights up there. It was beautiful, absolutely beautiful. And we stopped at every major landmark that we could think of along the way. We got to see Chimney Rock, and we got to see, there's all sorts of stuff out that way. And some of it had lots of places for us to go hiking. We've been so many places. We've gone canoeing down the Niobrara River in Nebraska, which is spectacular. You leave out of Valentine, Nebraska, which is also fairly out west, and canoe down the river there, and it's gorgeous. And there are lots of places. There are some places where there are, waterfalls. Smith Falls is along that stretch of the Niobrara River. And Smith Falls is gorgeous. It's this big ice-cold waterfall thing that comes down. You can get up there and play in it and hang out. But if you're really adventurous as you're canoeing down, there are lots of places where if you think you spot a little stream coming out, go park your canoe, get it beached up there somehow, and then go follow that stream up and see where it goes. And we have found all sorts of amazing things back in the woods off of the Niobrara River. There's one spot that we hit with the scouts, and then they insisted that we had to hit it again the next time. And sure enough, they found it again. But we hiked all the way up the stream, and then there's some little falls and then more stream. And then when they finally got to the main portion of it, the highlight, as it were, there's a waterfall that comes down and has formed a basin that is about the size and shape of a big hot tub. And so everyone had to get up there and go sitting in this basin, like this giant little hot tub and it's mounted way up. So you're like climbing up a hillside, and then all of a sudden there's this hot tub, and then the waterfalls go up above that even. And of course, the quote unquote hot tub is just filled with ice cold water. But man, we had a blast, and everyone got to sit in there and play under the falls again. And, just lots of stuff to discover in there. We have, spent time at Mahoney State Park many times. I spent my 40th birthday there in a giant 20-person cabin. Mahoney State Park is cool, has lots of things to do, but we just liked the cabin. That's where, it was a party and a half all weekend long. That was really cool. If you've never been to the Sandhills of Nebraska, look, most of Nebraska, I'll grant you, it's flat cornfield. If you come from a place with hills and mountains, if you come from like the East Coast, for example, the idea that you can be sitting on a road that is absolutely flat and you can see miles in one direction is really amazing. And it can get boring and tedious after a while. But like a spot where I'm sitting on a highway and I'm at the mile marker road, because we just spaced out our roads. We have a road every mile. It's just nice and easy like that. And I'm sitting at 1 mile marker road, and I can look out across a cornfield that literally extends a mile back and a mile across, and it is one solid square mile, and you can see the roads that mark out the edges of it, and it is perfectly flat, nothing but cows and hay bales, because it's nothing but a grass, perfectly flat grassy field that's been rolled up into hay, and it's just stunning to see just unbroken land like that. Weird. But then, that's a lot of Nebraska. But then you get out west, and we got the Sandhills. Oh, before I get to the Sandhills, my wife just interrupted me to remind me that her aide that works with her, her daughter-in-law is from Croatia and was just overwhelmed at the sight of Nebraska, because she didn't know it was possible to be somewhere that you could see that far, that the idea that you had flat land that extended for so far into the distance was just – it wasn't even anything that had ever registered with her. I mean, she's from Croatia, for goodness sake. It's all, unless you're out on the water, unless you're out in the sea, you're not going to see that distant a horizon. It's really impressive. I mean, again, if you're driving, staring into it for, 7 hours in a row, okay, maybe you'll get a little tired of it at that point. But then, like I said, go out to the Sandhills, and we've got real rough country. It's not Colorado. It's not the Black Hills, but it starts to get close. And the Sandhills are unique. Not only are they really beautiful terrain and lots of interesting things in them, but the Sandhills of Nebraska are unique in that, the Sandhills crane go look at the migratory patterns of the Sandhills crane. Just pull it up right now and look at a map of the migratory patterns of the Sandhill crane. And you will see that during the summer, they are spread out all across Canada. All right. And during the winter, they are spread out all across the southern U.S. and into Central America. And they have this huge wide range. And yet, when they migrate, every single sandhill crane in the world passes right through the sandhills of Nebraska. They all go through this one teeny tiny little area. So look at the map, and it is, you know, as they're all headed north for the winter or for the summer, it is every single one of them, they all converge. And they all pass through this one tiny little area of Nebraska, and then they all spread back out again. And, you know, it's regular as clockwork. It's right there on the calendar. If you can schedule a time to be in the sandhills when it's happening, man, you'll see your share of sandhill cranes. It is really impressive. So there's that. Did I mention me? Did I mention that I'm here? Man, we've done all sorts of stuff in Nebraska, but it's also stuff that I'm so used to. I mean, we do this stuff all the time. Oh, my wife's got another one. Yeah, in addition to doing the canoeing down the Niobrara, we've also gone tanking before, which was gorgeous. And tanking, if you've never been, because, all right, when you go canoeing, they've got canoes and they've got kayaks. And then a lot of times people prefer to just go tubing. And so you get big inner tubes and people will lash a whole bunch of them together for their party. And you even get special inner tubes that are built for holding your cooler full of well, you're not supposed to have beer out on the water, but people do. But you also have the option of going tanking, which that is take a cow tank, which is literally a water tank for cattle. Take a cow tank that is, you know, it's just a round tank that 10 foot across, and you throw it out in the water. And these particular tanks that we were in have a built-in – they have benches built in around the edges, and they have a built-in table in the center that you can set stuff on. And you just sit down at this table inside of a cow tank, sitting on the water, and it just floats on downriver. And it was really cool. We spent we had such great pictures of that one too. Lisa and I, for the most part, stayed inside the cow tank the whole time. And the three kids, because Jacob didn't go with us on that one, but the three other kids, they all spent almost the entire time in the water, either holding onto the tank or just swimming along behind us or ahead of us or around us. And we just wandered on down the river that way, spent a whole day there. It was gorgeous. Oh, we had so much fun. I love being in Nebraska. There is a surprising lot to do. And if you're from other areas of the country, everybody's got their own stuff. Every state has their own really cool things that you can go do. And I'm not going to knock anybody else. I'm just going to say that if you show up here, we got a lot of stuff. We got a lot of stuff. It's actually a lot of fun. But all right, that's enough of Sarah Beth's question. Let's see. Oh, Nellie's on. Nellie says, what's your opinion on Dakota Pipeline? My opinion on the Dakota Pipeline is from what I can see, I feel that that the protesters have not been treated fairly up there, and I'm glad to see that they're getting as much support as they are. But also at this point, the last thing I just saw this maybe 3 hours ago on my own forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds, and Phoebe, who used to be Elle, who used to be Lucy, Phoebe posted up and said that it looks like they've now come to some sort of agreement that the pipeline is going to go around the Native American territory up there, and that the thing is going to be resolved. But I don't know. I just saw her say that. I don't know any details of what that means. So Nellie continues on. What's your prediction about what's going to happen? My prediction is that, yeah, this is going to be settled by them going around, and it's going to be some extra expense. But at this point, the optics of this, the PR of this is not good. Not good at all for them. Even if the oil people in this case were completely right about everything, all right? Even if they really were completely within their rights, and I'm thinking that they're not, but even if they were, this looks bad, all right? No matter what happens, this looks bad, and they need to do something about it. And going around is going to be worth the extra expense for them to just get this done with, get their pipeline finished and stop looking like they're beating up on Native Americans and old people. And now, oh God, thousands of veterans showed up in support of the Native Americans. You can't go turning water cannons on veterans. That is not going to look good at all. So my guess is it's going to be settled and they're going to go around and everything's going to clear up. So Nellie then continues and said, "Reckon things would have been worse had there been Trump as president already?" I have no idea. I honestly have no idea. Trump doesn't sound like the guy who would have been all that concerned about going around. But again, I have no idea. That just doesn't sound good at all, does it? So, all right. That is it for Facebook. Let me head on over to my website at nerdprideradio.com/nerds, and we'll see if anybody's there. All right. So here I am at my website and at nerdprideradio.com/nerds, and I have a lot of responses, most of them from Eliahad. Let's see how this goes. all right. Eliahad says, "Mike, oh God." All right. Cause I opened it up I was in a hurry. So I just put up "Listener Betrayal, do yo thang." So in response, Eliahad says, "Mike, roll up a random instant game setting and do your thing." Oh, jeez. All right, hold on. Let me go find it. All right, no problem. I knew I had it here. I've got a spreadsheet that will do all the rolls for me. We'll make this nice and easy. So, all right, and go. All right, setting. This is an Orwellian future. Ooh, it's a horror game in an Orwellian future. Well, we're already playing Paranoia, aren't we? Except horror. So, all right, so it has to involve, this is the full instant challenge. It has a lot of roles in it that I have to incorporate. So let's try this. A Orwellian future horror story with, it says, I have to incorporate a hotel, an informative hotel, and an illusory werewolf. Ooh. All right, informative hotel, illusory werewolf. Oh man. So ultimately it's going to be a horror story. The hotel, I'm going to guess, is some huge archaeology building where this Orwellian future where they everything is recorded and everyone is spied on and recorded in every moment of every day. And all that information goes to this huge archaeology building, this huge gigantic thing. And we're going to refer to it as a hotel because, again, it's so huge that most of the workers who actually have to help process this information and they actually have to live there. It's this gigantic enclosed thing. And the illusory werewolf, I'm assuming that somebody is working to scare everybody, and it's going to eventually end up as kind of a Scooby Gang sort of thing by the time we get to the end of it because, again, illusory werewolf, it's not real. So we'll pull the mask off and Big Brother. Oh, and I would have gotten away with it too. But oh man, opposition, big business. Okay. So our Orwellian future is orchestrated by Google or some other, equivalent corporation capable of spying on everybody at all moments. And let's see, the opposition is big business and oh man, this is really tough. Because the action for the opposition says, escape a vehicle. Oh, that one doesn't help me. You know what? I'm not even gonna worry about all this plot stuff. I've already got the Scooby Gang werewolf, in the giant, Orwellian archaeology. I'm really, really good with that one. I'm not gonna spend a whole lot of time on this. I was just about to ring R2. Instead, no, I have to go back to Dave's questions. All right. That was Dave's first question. Dave's second question is, Mike, roll up 3 Potomatics. All right. I guess I do have to go to R2. Pick your favorite question out of those 3 and do your thing. All right. Let's go see what those 3 questions are. There we go. All right. 80. Ooh, 0. And 78. All right. 80. I'm not going to tell you guys what these are. There. All right. 78. 78 was one that I already had from Kyle. So let's go. with the double aught, which is, wow. Oh, see, I can't do that one. That one's, what are your thoughts on the Mars One project and colonizing Mars? I already kind of covered that. We want to hit something original this time. 12 we've already done. Man, all right, 76, I can do that. So my choices are 76 and 78. And that way I can leave the Mars question in so I can talk about it another time because I love talking about colonization of space. So my two questions were, you know what? He said I can only pick one. So, all right, we're going to go with Lucy's question. Lucy's question is, who wins in a cage fight between the Tick and Jessica Jones? Ugh. Sadly, the Tick. I feel like if you're going to put the two of them into a cage fight, we're already on Tick's turf. This is already, at least the Jessica Jones that I got from the TV show. I'm not going to go with the comic book Jessica Jones. I'm going to go with the TV version. And look, she's already tortured by her own demons. She's an alcoholic. She's very angsty, very dark. Whereas Tick is just going to be Tick, and whatever she throws at him is just going to bounce off. It's not it's just like barely going to even register to him that she's even upset about anything, or why they might even be fighting. And ultimately, she's going to wind up defeating herself in some way, and Tick is going to walk out not realizing that there had been a fight in the first place. That's my guess. So, all right. Let's see if Dave has any more questions. Is it possible? Compose a haiku on the topic of DM Darks' awesomeness. All right, a haiku about Pat. DM Darks is three syllables already, so that's pretty good. Oh, man, but see, DM Darks is so awesome. Well, that's clear. All right. So that's clearly got to be our second line. DM Darks is so awesome. Yeah, see, there's our second line. DM Darks is so awesome. So there's our second line. So so the first line, Pathfinder GM, there we go. DM Darks is so awesome. Pathfinder GM, DM Darks is so awesome. Oh, I know. He is the big spoon. There you go. Done. Let's see. Oh, look, the next one's from Dave. Dave says, you know who else is awesome, though? Mike Jones. I'm quoting here. This is from Dave. He's the nicest guy in the world, and he knows how to listen, which is probably why he's so nice. And wise, guys. So wise. I bet he has a kick-ass wisdom score. Mike Jones, as it were, rocks. Well, there's no question there, so I guess I can't argue with any of that. Thank you, Dave, by the way. That's very, very sweet of you. Eliahad then continues on and says, all right, you've done the writing for role-playing game thing. All right, so what board game do you want to make? I feel like you were going to tell me one time, but I've forgotten. See, you're the one who listens, not me. I'm selfish that way. Yeah, but look, you're working on it, right? Okay. For a board game, the only board game I've ever really done any work with is, it was a game called Gravball, and it was essentially a soccer style match done in super slow motion, on a hexagon field. And the rules were pretty solid as far as, how the ball moved and how the players moved and the kind of motions you could take. The problem was it was super slow. I mean, it played out in bullet time and it was just, everything was so finely detailed and other than running, catching, throwing, there wasn't a whole lot to do. I mean, it was a very strategic sort of game, and from the very limited playtest we had, very hard to actually score anything. So, you know, need a little tweak in there. But that's the only board game I've ever actually designed. To go beyond that, I don't have an idea for a board game right now. But God, I wouldn't mind. Man, I just got to come up with some. So, my mind, as much as I've been playing board games and card games lately, you would think that with my obsession with various stuff, you would think that the ideas would just be coming to me, but, I'm just enjoying them as they come. I'm not even really looking at the design aspect yet, although we've had a couple of good ideas. I mean, me and you and Pat worked on, some really cool stuff. We were building from the idea of Animal Ball when we were at dinner at Gen Con. And, there's stuff we could do, but yeah, I haven't put a whole lot into it. Really haven't put a whole lot of thought into that. All right. Next up. Let's see. Oh, look, it's from Eliahad. At this point, you're either leaving listener betrayal up until morning. No, I'm not. Or you're regretting leaving it up at a time when I'm not in rehearsal. When I saw the list of questions and I saw the word haiku in there, I was a little intimidated, but you know what? It hasn't been that bad. It could be that you're enjoying this. Yeah, I am now. Again, I was scared at first, but now that we're into it, I think we're doing all right. So, let's see. Next one's from Eliahad. What do you think of the bad lip reading of Yoda and Luke on Dagobah? Have you seen it? And what are your thoughts? Saw it. Don't like it. It's cute. It's really cute, but it's not what I want from bad lip reading. From bad lip reading, I want to watch people on the screen and I want the words to match the movements of their lips, even though it's completely ludicrous and obviously not what's supposed to be going on. With Luke and Yoda, there's a couple of things from Luke, but a lot of the words are either when their mouth is not facing the camera or it's from Yoda, who is a Muppet in that movie. So, bad lip reading on a puppet, you can put pretty much anything in his mouth and it's going to look okay with the lips because he's a puppet. That's not – I was disappointed. I mean, it's a cute bit and a cute song, but I expect more out of bad lip reading. I really do. Let's see. This is also from Dave. You know what would be the coolest thing I learned about this past week? That multicellular life may have started because a couple of single-celled organisms merged together for protection. That is effing brilliant. Yeah, isn't it though? The idea that, we still see, like I just did the bit on lichens a couple months ago, whereas lichens are actually three different organisms that all bond together in the same way every time and wind up making what functions as a single organism, but it's actually three different creatures. That's really cool. So yeah, imagine that at some point, early on, that, single-celled organisms, first bonded together to become multicellular organisms, not intentionally, just because they were just always working together and they had a symbiotic relationship that really worked for each other. And that it's possible that, maybe some of the organelles within certain larger single-celled forms, that maybe some of the organs inside them actually were originally separate single-celled organisms that got absorbed into them, or who knows what. But yeah, I think that's completely badass. I'm totally with you on that. Eli then says, whatever happened to Waffles? Waffles kind of ended when we all moved from Bulldreck into the Animal Ball forums. Like, we carried them on in Animal Ball for a while, but Waffles were never really an Animal Ball thing. It was just the stuff that the old Bulldreck people still occasionally said once in a while. Waffles being, for those of you who aren't familiar with it, Waffles is kind of a very affectionate, violent sort of hug expressed online. So, there you go. We need to bring them back. Look, if they start coming back, I am perfectly fine with picking up that torch as well. I think that is completely fine. So, get started on that. Kaz will help you. I'm sure he will. And we'll get the ball rolling. Then Eliahad says, all right, I'm out. Good night, Mike. I hope you rocked this podcast. I hope I did too. For whatever it's worth, I'm having a great time. That's all that matters. Oh, look, and then there's one that's not from Dave. It's from Phoebe. And she says, which would you rather find? A Waffle? A Binkle, or a Charlie? Well, I don't know if those are real things or not, so I don't know how to judge. Hold on a minute. All right, I find no evidence that these are actually connected words of any sort. So given the choice between a waffle, a binkle, and a Charlie, I'm going to go with the Charlie because I did find evidence that that is the name of a Loch Ness Monster type creature somewhere out there in this vast world of ours. And although there's also several references to Charlie Sheen, which I didn't look up, so I don't know if that was connected to the cryptid monster or not. But you know, being able to find a Loch Ness Monster style beast, that would be pretty darn cool. I could find one of those. I mean, assuming it's not going to eat me. But yeah, that wouldn't be bad. So, all right, and then I think that's the end of it. Hey, yeah, the next one's me saying done. So I guess we're done. So thank you guys for showing up. Thank you for listening. I hope you had a good time. I will be back next week, I assume. I love you guys. It's been wonderful. I am out.